Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Are you awake, Mitch?
I am. I'm actually really good. I had a good sleep last night. Oh, apart from Ollie was kicking me again in the head and kicking the blankets off and stuff like that, which is what he does.
Ollie likes to get in your face while he's sleeping, doesn't he? We've had a big week, haven't we?
We have. We've had a big relationships in you week, which was one of those ones where everybody that came into the room was very different to any other relationships in you I think I've ever run and we've ever held, and it was very difficult to I didn't know how it was going to go.
It was just different. Isn't it funny, I've said that to a couple of people and they were like, why? And I'm like, I can't explain it. It was just a different kind of crew. But it was beautiful. It was lovely, amazing.
Yeah. Some great stories in there. There were some amazing breakthroughs.
Yeah.
Which is just freaking lovely.
So do you know what I was saying to you guys as we debriefed, we had someone in there who we met when she was 2, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe 2 years old.
Yeah.
When her mum came through and did relationships in you, like 17 years ago.
It's interesting now that their really kids, people's on. Kids, are starting to come through. Yes. But and I mean, it says a lot because it says a lot about the longevity of the event.
That's what I think. I think that to me is really, really lovely.
And then it also says a lot about the fact that parents were so moved by the experience themselves many years ago that they are willing to send their own children through, which is great.
I know, and that's really, really lovely. So that it made me feel a little old, to be honest, to be fair.
Yeah.
I was like, I knew you when you were two.
Well, I think we're probably going to see, like, I think we're probably going to see more and more of that over the coming years.
We've seen it a little bit already they probably weren't two, where we've worked with the kids of the parents we worked with. But this is the longest time coming.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was interesting. It was good. It was lovely. It's good to have that.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's this song today?
I was just listening to that song. We started dancing and love got us into the groove, and everyone started to move. And that's from very early 80s in my breakdance days when I was a kid.
Breakdance days.
I used to get around with runner boots. And so the whole get up and the setup was your runner boots with white socks over your pants. And your pants tucked down your runner boots. Socks. And then your pants had to be baggy. Yeah. So we used to go up to the end of the street outside the local shop and we would put down a cardboard box and outside the local shop. And then we'd... I was always about money. And because you just wanted lollies. And then we'd put a sign down and a hat, and then people would throw money into the hat because we were breakdancing.
I'm just going to call you Lexi. That's such a Lexi thing to do. Breakdancing. Do you remember that? I don't know if we've told this on the podcast about the party we went to where you just threw down some people were throwing down cardboard boxes,
I haven't had that much beer now. Figure off.
Oh, that's funny.
It's funny though, because, you know, my kids are both into dance now, you know, they're both really, really into it. And it's funny, this week Lexi has started mixing music, which is cool. And then yesterday in Relationships and You, there was a kid came in who teaches. Teaches people how to mix, and I was questioning about how much it costs,
I was speaking to him yesterday as well.
All the people that you need to be able to help your kid do what they love, if that's what they want to do, you know.
Yeah.
So she's loving it.
Yes,
she's loving music, which is great. Mm-hmm. She obviously gets that from her father's side of things.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, her mother wasn't a pianist.
Well, neither were you. And
well,
you taught
kinda,
you fucking
I
one
was.
Song.
I kind of was.
And you've just milked that for the last 60
on that
years
piano,
of your life.
I was a fucking pianist. And I said pianist, not penis.
Oh, dear.
What are we talking about today? We've had some questions around this
of people ask us about that whole law of attraction thing, right? Because it was such a big thing when it came out, you know, that whole thing around the secret and stuff like that. And I think people confuse us a little bit sometimes, or people who don't know us, confuse us with, I suppose, that whole positive affirmation sort of attraction.
So maybe we should start with talking about positive affirmations then, right? And we should talk about...
Or being positive. Positive.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, people know us for poo-pooing the whole positive thinking movement. And I don't think there is a positive thinking movement anymore in the world.
I don't think it's...
No, I think it's long gone. And I think that one of the reasons for that is because it didn't work. And, you know, it's just a quick recap on what we've said before around attraction and the law of attraction and that sort of stuff. And it really came to the forefront, as we all know, through the book The Secret. And
well, we haven't said it before on a podcast, Mitch. So
have we not?
So that's why we're talking about it.
Oh, I thought we said it before. We've never talked about it before. No. The law of attraction on a podcast. Have we not? Fuck. Okay, well, let's quickly cover it then. there was a book that came out a number of years ago. I can't remember the author's name. What was her name?
Rhonda Byrne.
And it went to, the book went to film. And I think Rhonda was originally a producer. And she got all these people on board and it went to film. And it brought to light, to the general public, the concept that there were laws in the world. And... the unfortunate thing, I mean, the fortunate
about
thing.
The Secret.
The Secret, yeah. The fortunate thing, sorry, the book was called The Secret, and then, which the movie was also called The Secret. The fortunate thing was that it did bring the concept of laws to the world and to mainstream, which I think was just, you know, such a good thing to happen.
Well, it needed to happen, I think.
Yeah, it was just time. And, you know, that was with the emergence of the access of information, you know, at our fingertips and the speed at which we could access information. And it just went bananas. It was like a wildfire. It just went crazy globally. But the unfortunate thing was it was in some way misinformation. So there was a lot of misinformation in there. And I don't know whether it was deliberate. In fact, I don't think it was deliberate. I think it was just down to lack of understanding and ignorance with some of the speakers that were speaking in there. And what they did was, it was mainly about laws, but it was then from there, it was mainly about the law of attraction. And it misinformed people about the law of attraction, what the law of attraction was and how it worked. And it kind of gave this delusion, and as much as there was, don't get me wrong, there was some great information in there, but people walked away thinking, okay, here's how the law of attraction works. You know, if I sit and I visualize something, then it's going to come to me. But the creation of anything takes a lot more than just visualizing something. And the other problem was that what they didn't discuss was that we live in a dualistic reality from the macroscopic universe to the microscopic universe. Everything in humanity is in duality. It doesn't happen as a singularity. So therefore, if from the macroscopic universe to the microscopic universe, everything in humanity is in duality, then you cannot impose the concept of a singularity onto a humanity that from the macroscopic universe to the microscopic universe commands duality.
Yes.
So you cannot impose the illusion of happiness without creating sadness.
Yeah.
You cannot impose the illusion of peace without creating war. You cannot impose the illusion of attraction and talk about attraction without also discussing repulsion.
Yeah.
Because repulsion is the opposing side of attraction. And so that's why, in the end, it fizzled out like a, you know...
It didn't. I think there's some people that still, you know, abide by that. Or I just feel like people progress past that, or that
The documentary and the movie fizzled out. It didn't. It people started to see it for what it was. There was a lot went on afterwards. You know, there was a lot we found out about the producers not getting paid. And we, you know, one of the speakers ended up in prison after was done for manslaughter and stuff like that. And, you know, Sharma was chased around by 60 Minutes here in Australia with a camera, and poor old, what's his name, the speaker, got caught up in that as well. He was running to a lift with a camera in his face. And
Bob Proctor.
And you know, Bob's a well-known metaphysician and a well-known lecturer.
But I think that what happens is that when you see something like that and you are under the you leave with an understanding that you can think about things and you can just in thinking about things, you attract things into your life, right?
Yep.
That at some point when that doesn't work, because it can't work, because there's other factors, like you said, mm-hmm. that are involved in terms of manifesting in your life, right? When that doesn't work, people feel disheartened, I suppose. Disheartened by the fact that you think, like, things like, I can't even remember because it's been many, many years, some of the things that they speak about. But what happens is that when you're attracting in your life, right, you're attracting based on not the thing that you're consciously thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You're attracting based on how you're feeling at a deep subconscious level, right?
Yeah.
So you can have a conscious thought. This is something we speak about all the time, right, in what we do. Mm-hmm. You can have a conscious thought that says, I deserve and the money should come, right? But if deep down inside you feel like unworthy and you feel like you're not good enough, or you feel like you're abandoned, you feel like you're neglected, and if mum could do that to you, then life could do that to you,
mm-hmm.
then it doesn't matter how much you think mm-hmm. I deserve, like consciously.
Mm-hmm.
At a subconscious level, you're attracting what your innermost thought is, not what your conscious thought is, right? And I think that they didn't really cover that. It made it feel like you could just consciously think about something and life would change.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah, for sure. And I think the problem there is that, you know, it gave the whole this whole, you know, manifesting. I'm manifesting. You are manifesting your reality every single moment. But if you don't understand all of the nuts and bolts that go along with that, then manifesting becomes a fucking annoying word because you feel as if. You know, I've put all of this time into visualizing and it's just not turning up and it's just not happening.
Yeah.
And without all the information, you're misinformed.
Yes.
If you haven't got all the information, you're misinformed about how you create your reality.
Yeah.
And there is now an absolute science to how we are creating a reality.
Yes.
And everything you have, like everything you're fucking wearing, the house, you've manifested all of that. And you know, when
when you say that you're manifesting all of it, that is the law of attraction. You've attracted all of that.
Yeah.
But you've also attracted all of the shit that's going on in your life as well.
Yeah.
You've attracted all of the problems that you've created. You've attracted all of that stuff. So when they're talking about it, they were just talking about all the plus positive fluffy stuff instead of going, no, if that's there, then all of this is true as well.
Yeah, does all of it's true. Yeah. So people were buying into the illusion that life could be all plus, plus, plus.
Yes.
And like if you're chasing the illusion of peace, just history will tell you we've never, ever had peace on Earth, ever. It's never, ever, ever, ever been documented, ever.
Yeah.
So therefore, you can't buy into the illusion of peace. It's a prerequisite to the evolution of our consciousness. War is a prerequisite to the evolution of our consciousness. We need war.
Yes.
It has to happen.
Yes.
You know, so, and then if, you know, sadness, you know, people want to be happy. If you're chasing happiness, you are blind to the fact that sadness allowed you to get the measure of who you were as a human being. And that was the problem. If you're chasing attraction, you're also repelling things.
Yes.
You know, you have to understand, and it doesn't matter what the fuck you do consciously. It doesn't matter what you do consciously. Your conscious processor has absolutely no control over your reality. So if you're going, oh, but I'm consciously attracting, I'm trying to consciously attract this, the reason it's not happening is because your conscious processor is not in charge of the show.
Yeah.
It's just not in charge of the show.
People think that, you know, these words and these affirmations and stuff that sit on the surface are actually in charge, but they're not. They're just covering up a whole heap of shite that's going on, and they're thinking, if I say these words and if I do these things and if I practice this plus stuff, then I can just kind of cover up the minus stuff underneath.
I think that we have to understand, if we're a broadcasting system, that when we publicly broadcast something into the world, and even if that's in your lounge room and you're telling yourself something, you are publicly broadcasting into the world a desire, and you have attached to that desire an emotion of plus. Simultaneously, to the same degree, you privately attach to yourself a part of you that says privately minus. And you have minus emotions attached to that because everything happens in duality. Mm-hmm. So when you publicly say to the world, this is what happens with kids where, you know, when they're 18, 19, you say to them, you know, what do you want to be? And the kid has this epiphany one day and they go, fuck, I want to be an architect. I'm going to be the greatest architect that ever lived. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be someone that changes the, you know, the world in terms of how we use raw materials, you know, recyclable materials. And you hear the kid really passionately broadcasting that into the world. What they don't realize is that privately, simultaneously, there's a part of them that goes, no, you're not. You haven't done it. You're not doing it. You can't do it. You won't be able to do it. So a public infatuation is balanced out by a private resentment. Mm-hmm. And I know people don't want to hear that. So the question is then, okay, so how do we create a reality? Are you telling us we should never dream? No, I'm saying that if you're going to dream, we've spoken about vision and visionaries before. If you're going to dream, if your child is doing that, then the next thing you need to do is reverse engineer how they're going to get from where they are to where they want to be. And show them that both things will happen. So the reason kids give up on their dreams is because they publicly broadcast a dream into the world, but privately they ridicule themselves because they're not already there.
Mm-hmm. So not just kids, everyone.
Everybody. Really, they're not already there. But I see it happen with 18-year-olds when they're going into that stage in their lives where they are being pressured to contemplate, what are you here to do? Why do they give up on things?
Yes, because I think that... I think we're sidetracking quite a bit because we've got to come back to something else in a minute. But this is part of the drawback of kids getting putting things out there and getting feedback that they're on track. Like, for example, likes on Instagram or Facebook and things like that, right? Because it gives them the hit of getting something right, and they get used to this. They want the process to be plus, plus, plus along the way. They get used to the dopamine hit of getting the likes and thinking that to get there, it has to be plus, plus, plus.
You have to get more pluses.
Yes, but everybody knows that in order to get to anywhere you want to be, you've got to accept and you've got to acknowledge that there's going to be challenges along the way. Mm-hmm. It's not just going to be one-sidedness. Mm-hmm. It's not just going to be everything is just
the problem. The problem is with that delusion and parents coming from that delusion as well. It's because so many kids are born into families where the parents didn't understand this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they were also just in their own way through their own means at the time, you know, fed the illusion that you can have a pleasure without a pain, that you can have rich without poor, that you can have happiness without sadness. Yeah. And therefore, if you're doing that and you're not getting the happiness and all you're getting is the sadness, then you have a tendency to give up.
Yes.
So this is why, you know, understanding that there's a formula to how you've all manifested everything in your life. Mm. And the process of getting to where you want to get to, for example, if your child wants to become wealthy, right? The process of getting there, if you speak to any wealthy person, they'll tell you having money is heaven and hell.
Both, 100%.
It's heaven and hell. It's pleasure and pain. It's right and wrong. It's good and bad. It's challenge and support. It's everything.
I think that's the best way to describe it, because people resonate when you talk about money, right? You think you want to attract money in your life.
And it's going to give you all plus.
And you think it's only going to give you plus. And that's why money will never come to you, because money comes with it pluses and minuses. Mm-hmm. And if you can't handle the plus and the minus that comes with having more money, mm-hmm. you will not get any more. If you're not able to handle the plus and the minus of what you want to attract, mm-hmm. you will not attract that in your life if you're thinking it's just a plus.
So if one of the steps in how we manifest, there's seven steps to how we manifest things. One of the steps is what we feel about, we bring about. Now, in terms of what we feel about, we bring about, if you have a delusion about manifesting a dream that you want to fulfill and it's only plus, and you start to get feedback that it's coming about, but it attracts minus as well, and you don't understand that you have to manage the minus side of it and the plus side of it.
Yes.
The more you chase the plus and the more minus turns up, the more likely you are to give up.
Correct.
So therefore, I want you to understand here is this is how we know then that part of manifesting something in your reality has an emotional side to it, because your emotions are tangling with particles that bring about what you feel about. And then if you're not able to manage the heaven and hell of being a millionaire, you'll never get $1 million. But the problem is people are bred to believe that having it is going to, you know, having the car, the Lamborghini, is going to be only plus. But it's not.
Yeah.
Because you worry about everywhere you park the fucking thing.
Yeah.
You know, you worry about every road you drive down. Yeah. You worry about every corner you turn. You worry about whether someone's going to hit you, whether it's going to get scratched, where do you leave it?
Your case in point, you park like three shopping centres away from the place you want to go
to. Yeah, I do. And then you worry about getting speeding fines, and you worry about getting pulled over, and that's the reality of having money.
So I agree with that, right? And I get that, and I think 100% right. And I think anyone who listens to us for long enough knows that you got to have the plus with the minus, right? Mm. I think another point I want to make with the whole attraction thing before we finish up, though, is that you're right that there's an emotional feeling side of it. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest problems with the laws of attraction is people stop there. They think that even if they feel it, and they get the plus and minus, that they can just meditate and a bag of money is going to fucking fall out of the sky, right?
Yeah.
It is not possible to have attraction without taking action. Mm-hmm. You have to take action in your life if you want to attract anything in your life. You cannot sit back, right, and say, I want to get there, but I'm just going to wait for life to bring it to me. Mm-hmm. You've got to step out and you've got to do stuff to make that happen because acting about and taking action is actually one of the manifestation steps as well. Mm-hmm. Feeling about is one of them, but acting about is another. Because you have a great example of your Porsche, you know, and you wanted to attract your Porsche, right? Mm-hmm. In order to feel about it, you also went and acted about it, right? Mm-hmm. You went and drove the Porsche.
Oh, yeah.
You went and imagined what it felt like because you'd done it before.
I used to get up every morning and sit. I went down and I drove the car. And I drove the car for ages. In fact, I ended up getting a text message back from the dealer saying, lovely day for driving the Porsche. Can you bring the Porsche back, please? And I drove the car everywhere for like at least... It was probably 45 minutes to an hour and a half maximum. But every morning I would wake up, I would sit on the side of my bed and I would drive that Porsche.
But then you wouldn't just sit on the side of the bed and drive the Porsche. You went and did stuff in order to make happen, right? So action is a really big part of the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. You can't just, you know, wake up in the morning and just affirm to yourself that you're a Porsche driver.
But I also think that people need to understand that when you're making that step, there's also a repulsive part of having money. There's a repulsive part that goes along with having attracting something. You repel things, right? Because you might attract the money but repel part of your family because they don't want to be around you.
Yeah.
Because, you might attract the business and the career, but you repel your friends because they feel less than you because you're achieving things.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you fucking ignore that, like that's ignorant.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't ignore that stuff. You have to understand that when you're encouraging your kids to achieve things, when you're looking at your own dreams and aspirations, be accountable for all of it.
Yeah.
Don't be delusional. You know, when you're sitting there, and I'll just cover this as well because I wanted to cover it. When you're sitting there and people are affirming to themselves, oh, I am this and I am this and I am this, you know, you're doing it from a place of, the reason you're doing it is because you don't feel what you already are.
Correct.
Right? So, but what if you're going, I am beautiful, the reason you're having to tell yourself that is because innately, subconsciously, you feel ugly.
Well, that's what I was saying before, is that that layer of affirmation covers up the underneath of I don't feel that, so I'm going to say this to help hopefully trigger the opposite. It's actually, you've got to combine the two. You have got to get at a deep subconscious level that you are that.
Already.
That's already.
Yeah, emotionally.
Because you attract and repel what you are like.
Yeah.
All of the time.
Yeah.
You, every single thing, every single person, every single situation that you attract, every single situation, person, experience that you repel, you are like.
Mm-hmm.
You are like both of those things, right? So you've got to be able to understand that both of that those parts.
100%. I think also that, you know, in attraction and repulsion, I think it's important for people to understand that your public broadcasting, so we're electromagnetic particles. That's what we are. The electro is the broadcast, the magnet, the thought. The magnetic is the receive.
The feeling.
So you have to feel and think what you want. And you have to deal with the feeling side of it. And the feeling side of it, that innermost dominating thought, those deep feelings are what are actually tangling with the particles around you.
Yeah.
So your conscious mind doesn't play any real role in it. So what you got to ask yourself is, if you're going, oh, you know, I'm rich, you got to ask yourself, where am I poor? And how has being poor benefited me?
Yes.
Now you're actually starting to get rich.
And then to link it back to the action taking, because the action take is important, then the actions you take are aligned with the things that you want to attract.
Mm-hmm.
So
best explain that, because people won't.
Well, if you go about every day wanting to feel successful and free, but you feel like a failure and trapped, right, then your actions every day aren't going to be aligned with how you're feeling, which is like a failure and trapped. You're not going to
feel aligned.
Feel aligned and act aligned to the success and the freedom that you're trying to attract in your life. So when you balance out your thoughts and your feelings and you resonate with the things that you want in your life, the things that you feel in your life, your actions will automatically start to reflect that. They will be aligned with that, and then your daily actions will start to bring about the things that you want to attract.
So I'll just add a little bit to that. People who are in a state of wanting to be plus and wanting to attract things, but ultimately you've got to start with, how do you actually feel? How do you actually feel? When you're around people who are wealthy, one of the things that is very common, is very evident, is that they're very aware of the voids in their lives and they're able to handle what it is to have nothing, because a lot of the time they come from that place and they're able to handle it because they understand, not most likely consciously, but unconsciously, that the void in their lives and the feelings that they felt in those times gave way to the value in their lives and who they are now. So there's a deep congruency between the void and the value. And the greater the void.
No.
There's a deep congruency.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I get you. Sorry.
So they're able to see that the void
is the value.
Is the value. Yeah. So the void gave the void gave way to the value, which in turn determined the destiny. And the more congruent the person is with the void, meaning the greater the person is able to embrace the void and the value that they got out of that, the bigger the destiny and the greater the outcome that they get in their lives. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's super important. And what the movie The Secret did was, it shortcutted that. It said, no, just attract. No, you have to look at the parts that you want to repel as well. And that's where you find your depth. That's where you find your courage, your tenacity, your brilliance, your genius, your wealth. That's where your wealth lies. Wealth is not money. Wealth is your ability to be able to create congruency from the voids in your life to the values in your life to your destiny.
I really like that. That's a good way to end. I think just getting clear, so just to summarize, getting clear on who you are, the fact that your thoughts and your feelings have to align, you have to take congruent action. And that last piece about your voids and your values is important.
Yeah,
you've got to get really clear with that, with the depth of who you are. That was good.
All right. Enjoy.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.